most broken people can be great leaders.
His people did not call him general or king. They called him Kukulkan.
Show them who we are.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of our Tickets for Two podcast, where we aim to provide our unique insights on your favorite movies. And today, we are talking about the sequel to Black Panther. We're talking about Black Panther Wakanda Forever.
That's right, Andrew. We are headed back to Wakanda and the MCU. If you got tired of us listening to the MCU, don't worry about that. I promise. Andrew is not going to cry about the direction that Marvel
not
is
today.
Headed in. We're just going to talk about Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, some tie in to the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and get on with our review. Andrew, this movie was obviously had to be rewritten. I'm sure Michael B. Jordan and Kevin Feige had some ideas about what direction they wanted to go in. And then when Chadwick Boseman passed away, it probably flipped the script to a certain degree. And, you know, and kind of jumping all over the place in this one. You got a whole bunch of different characters who got a lot of screen time. You got Okoye, Queen Ramonda, Shuri, M'Baku. You got a little, spoiler alert, Ironheart in this film. And you got a whole bunch of Namor. And it really comes together. And I think it's a pretty solid film, you know. I think considering what they could do in that short time frame of a turnaround, I don't think there's much more you could ask for than this.
Before we get into our entire spiel today, I want to let everybody know that we're not going to rant about the MCU, the direction, Phase 4. So if you're here for that, I'm sorry you're not going to get it. So we're going to just treat this movie as we treat everything else, as just a regular standalone film. We're not going to think about the connections it's making, the overarching story, none of that. We're going to do like how we do everything else. We're going to do our first impressions of the film, what we liked, didn't like about the movie, and then we'll get into our facts and score about it all at the end. So sorry about that, guys. I know you've heard us rant too much already, but when I first exited the movie, I was pretty starstruck about it all. I had a great time. I know a lot of people have mixed feelings about it all, but I feel like me being of Hispanic culture, I got to bring this up. I felt very empowering seeing a lot of Mesoamerican culture and gods and a lot of, you know, the hairdress that Namor wore. It was all very beautiful to watch. And putting all that aside, I try not to be completely biased, I still think, like Santi mentioned, it's a very strong film about grief, about war, about power, about struggling within yourself. It was a very great thematic piece. I think Ryan Coogler is a fantastic director, and he definitely brought this in a direction that I didn't see coming. And Santi, I know you mentioned in our last episode that you were a big fan of Ryan Coogler. How do you think he did with this movie when you came out of the theater?
I think this film is actually quite beautifully shot at times, and it's directed well. The scenes flow from one to the other, and even though you can feel the length at a lot of times, and it's one of my bigger gripes about the film, it's never really boring in that sense. And I think Coogler's put something together here that's not one of the best MCU films, but considering the circumstances, I like how laser-focused, for the most part, it is on everything going on in Wakanda, everything going on with Namor, and all of that. It doesn't jump around too much. There's no doomsday device, end of the world. It really sticks to what it wants to cover. As you mentioned, there's the whole storyline aspect about the queen and Shuri going, you know, through their grief process, and there's also this whole thing about protecting and defending your homeland, which is revolving around Wakanda and Namor. And I think both those two themes and topics are really integrated well in this film, and that's why I think Coogler succeeded in putting this one together. It's not as hyped as the first one. It's not going to make as much money, and it's not going to be as beloved as that one. But it's definitely one of the stronger entries we've gotten in the MCU. And Andrew, I don't know what phase. Are we in Phase 5 yet? Is this Phase 4 still?
You know, so this was the end of Phase 4.
This was the end. This is definitely one of the most solid entries in Phase 4. You know, it's not perfect. I know there were lofty expectations for a follow-up to Black Panther, but given the circumstances around this film, that now you go from It's like, okay, we have our star. We're going to have a sequel set up to, it's like, okay, we kind of have to do a soft reset with this character and this world. They did a really good job of it.
They really did. And I can't believe they were able to bring this around on such short notice. I mean, rest in peace to Chadwick Boseman. His death really shook everybody, even from outside of the Marvel universe. Everyone just couldn't believe it. So when they had to scramble to redo the story, they came up with such an amazing concept. I love the idea that even before we knew everything was going to happen, even in the original story, Ryan Coogler still wanted Namor to be the main antagonist. And it's funny, after the first Black Panther movie was created and the huge success that it had, Ryan Coogler went to Kevin Feige and said, don't let anyone touch that character. Like, Namor's mine to use. So that's pretty cool. I saw such amazing, I would say even artwork in this entire film. Like, let's give a moment to talk about Talokan, the underwater city, because I know you are waiting to see how that rivals against Avatar, the Way of the Water.
It's not even going
to
be close.
Because like we mentioned earlier, this is how I felt during the movie as well. Even though it was like very dimly lit, and I understand why, because of like, you know, being underwater, you don't get sunlight, so they use like those bioluminescent plants or whatever.
Yeah.
It was very hard to see, and I get intentional, but you had a funny take on why you think it was dimly lit. Why would you say that?
Oh, yeah, you're right about the whole deep sea thing. Obviously, they don't want a whole lot of light down there, but the reality is, the more bright it is, the worse the CGI is going to stand out. And it's like, let's make everything as dark and difficult to see as possible. And it was one of the more disappointing parts of the film, because it was cool to see the city, but you didn't see much of the city. You saw some like outskirts and some little fish people swimming around and all that. But it's clear they had to make it as dark and difficult to see as possible, because, you know, the more we can see, the more we can notice like, oh yeah, that CGI is really bad. And knowing Marvel and how late they are with their schedules a lot of the time, you know, the CGI was going to be really, really wonky in this film. I gotta say, when we got introduced to the city, what is it called, Talokan, they were playing that one game in what's that Disney movie, not Emperor's New Groove, but the one where they go on an adventure. It's like the two guys. It's really funny. It's gonna really...
Oh, the Road to El Dorado, something like that.
Yeah, the Road to El Dorado. Yeah. They had the... I guess that's a callback, not to that film, but I guess that's an ancient game that they played. But you know, the one you like, it's like kind of like Quidditch. You shoot the ball through the hoop.
Yes, yes. I don't know. You're already stealing all my facts for the...
Oh, is that one? Yeah, I don't know. I just saw that and I thought immediately of the Road to El Dorado. I'm like, oh, I remember that game.
That was pretty sweet.
But yeah. That's why we didn't see a lot of the city. It was because it was going to look really, really bad.
So I know we're already diving a little bit into our likes and dislikes, so I want to avoid that for right now. But one thing I want to touch on after we just got through with our first impressions of the movie was, we talked about in our last episode of Black Panther the cultural impact that it had. Do you feel, Santi, that the impact of this one, Wakanda Forever, is going to be equally as strong as the first one because of the Hispanic kind of culture they're bringing into all this?
No.
How do you feel?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think I mentioned earlier as well, it's not going to be as impactful as the first one. I can see the whole side of the Hispanic culture thing, but because Namor is a villain, I mean, I know at the end he's a, you know, good guy or whatever, but because he's displayed as a villain and we don't see that much outside of him from that Talokan society, this movie is definitely going to be kind of like forgotten one in the MCU. It's not going to be one of the ones that stands out. People will watch and enjoy it, but I can't see folks going back to this one over and over again on an MCU rewatch.
That's interesting that you say that. So, I mean, on that note, I want to ask you, because I know you are, like we mentioned all the time whenever this gets brought up, that you are not as MCU focused as others are. So when you mention that it's not going to be like the most standout movies, in your opinion, from like your perspective, what is considered like a standout movie of, you know, the MCU that you think about?
Yeah, I think specifically in the MCU, when you think about the ones, it's like, yeah, that was good, I'm down to just watch that any time of the day. It'd probably be Iron Man 1, The Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, The Winter Soldier, you know, maybe one of the Spider-Mans, like Homecoming.
Okay.
Even like Doctor Strange 1.
Ooh, yes.
And Black Panther 1 to a certain extent. But those are the ones that really, I when I think about Marvel, I remember like, yeah, those were the great ones. Those were really peak. I would enjoy watching those a lot of times. There's nothing wrong with this one. It's just, you know, it's just not that important in its sense. And I think because there's not that much Black Panther in it, which I don't think there's anything wrong with that, folks want to see a superhero film. Yes. And I think the only reason to rewatch this is to see more Namor, which I think he got a lot of screen time in this, and which was a really good decision by Coogler. That would be the main thing that stands out to me.
Because you just mentioned all those movies, and I know we had some misses in our recent MCU lineup, like Doctor Strange, Thor, unfortunately some of the shows. We heard from an amazing director a while back, the good old Martin Scorsese, saying that Marvel is not cinema. And I feel like Black Panther: Wakanda Forever was recently their biggest attempt at making, you know, a cinematic Marvel. No pun intended. How do you feel about what Scorsese said back then? Do you think Marvel's stepping it up now, or are they still?
This is definitely a step in the right direction, Andrew. This one definitely has that cinematic feel. Like I said, its screenplay is pretty tight for the most part. The battle scenes are a lot of fun to watch. The music is absolutely fantastic. This one feels like a movie. It doesn't feel like some superhero filler, which Thor: Love and Thunder and to a certain extent Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness kind of felt like. This one feels much more movie-like. And look, I love Martin Scorsese, but I just even though we've talked about me not being the biggest Marvel guy, I just get tired of the hate. It's like, listen, it's got a certain purpose. It's got its audience. It has a goal. You know, we can criticize them. No one's saying they're the greatest films of all time. But there's nothing wrong with enjoying them and providing feedback where necessary. And Black Panther: Wakanda Forever, you know, it's a pretty good film for the most part. There's no need, I think, to tear it down and break it apart and say, oh, this comic book stuff, I'm sick of it, or just doesn't fit. You know what? If you don't like it, don't watch it if you're not into it. But at the same time, that's not an excuse for saying, oh, these movies all suck. It's like, no, we can look at it with a more critical perspective. So bad on you, Scorsese. I get it. I get it. He wants other, you know, he wants these more smaller films or the more, you know, drama-ish films to get more money. I totally understand that, but this isn't the first time this has happened. Blockbusters have always made more money than those Oscar, you know, contender ones. They were just not superhero movies. They were something else. You know, it was just some big, dumb action, end-of-the-world thing. So it's not like anything
Transformers.
New. Yeah, like Transformers, Fast and the Furious series.
Yes.
Plenty more old ones. It's just kind of like, listen, that's just what people like to go to the movies sometimes, turn their brains off, get some popcorn, and have a good time. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, both of those things can exist. Marvel is cinema. It absolutely is. It will stand the test of time, I think, for a lot of people. I get how some of the movies feel a bit more TV-like, but just the criticism of them not being cinema and this whole elitist bullshit, it's just really annoying.
Oh, yes. Okay, so I want to circle back to the main point before we move on to our next segment. Have we mentioned like what the cultural impact we think is compared to the first one? I want to agree with you. I think that this movie would not be as impactful or pretty huge compared to the first one, because we remember how glorious it was that we finally had a lead person of color just deliver such a powerful performance. And although Tenochtitlan, the actor who played Namor, he did fantastic. And I know he's doing his rounds right now on doing interviews and press for the movie, and he's bringing a lot more awareness to like the struggles of a Mexican actor of indigenous areas in Mexico make it into the scene. I know he got his big break with Narcos, and he's been in plenty of other movies before that with Lucy Liu and others. But I love that he's now bringing awareness that's a lot harder for these darker skinned actors. He mentioned this himself, get a lot of screen time. And so him bringing awareness that there's racism in Mexico with, you know, lighter, darker skinned people, I think he's doing his best kind of carry the mantle of like, this is my moment. I'm going to bring pride and honor to my people, and I'm going to do what I can for that. And I give him credit for it. But you're right. Sadly, like, the people are not buying it, because I agree with your reason. They labeled him as the villain of the movie, and not a lot of people are going to sympathize and, you know, parade around for a villain of a movie. So I definitely agree. It won't be as impactful as Black Panther, but I think it's still doing its part in bringing a lot of representation for those who haven't had that before.
Yeah, Andrew, I definitely agree with you. And Tenochtitlan, yeah, he definitely stood out to me. You know, I haven't heard that much about him, obviously, beforehand, but even after Black Panther: Wakanda Forever, I was expecting a lot of people when I went online, like, oh my gosh, like, he blew it out of the water. He was so great. And people are kind of like, you know, more focused on Shuri and all that, which is fine. But I'm like, wow, that was one of the better villains that I've seen in an MCU film. I don't know if it's just because he got a lot of screen time, but he was super convincing as that character. He was really charming at the same time as he was kind of villainous. And I thought he was great. Definitely one of my favorite MCU villains. So happy they didn't kill him off, which has been one of my pet peeves about Marvel movies. But yeah, I thought he was great. So I'm all about praising him. And I think the fact that, you know, he is Mexican and playing that role, you know, it means a lot. I think, you know, not just casting some random actor in that role. Sometimes it is the move. Sometimes it's not. I think it's good to give different folks a chance. I don't have to listen to any more fake accents in any other movie. Speaking of which, some of the accents in this movie are not very good.
Oh my gosh. Okay, wait, we'll get to that in a second, but I want to make one last point. It is a big deal, especially to me and to other people like me, that we got Tenochtitlan as this act or this character, because we don't have the quote-unquote, or not even quote-unquote, we don't have the Mexican representation in the MCU right now, or really in these, you know, big movies, because we have Oscar Isaac, he's Guatemalan. We have, we had Xochitl Gomez, I know she played America Chavez, who was Puerto Rican. So we don't really have, we didn't really have the Mexican representation until now. So it was a huge deal. I love it.
In Marvel specifically.
And like, right, I watch a lot of Mexican soap operas, interviews, a lot of Mexican media. And seeing him appear is kind of a beautiful thing. It's like, wow, we get to have him around. So that was the last point I wanted to make. That's a great thing that we finally have him. I hope nothing ever goes on, like a scandal is broken out, like, oh, Tenochtitlan's old Twitter account. Like, no, I hope he's clean. I hope he's good. Nothing ever happens.
Andrew, are you a Sabado Gigante fan?
I am. Sabado Gigante.
I'm a huge fan of that show. Or I was. Back, you know, all about Don Francisco, man. That guy's a legend.
Yes. It's funny. Okay, so I want to move on to our likes and our dislikes of this movie, because I think we have plenty of that, even though we have alluded to a few of those already when we were talking about our first impressions. So Santi, I want to know, first of all, what did you like about the movie? Let's start off on a positive note.
Yeah. One of the main things that stood out to me was how gorgeous the outfits in this film was, especially during the funeral scene. It's like, great job by the production team, just kind of setting everything up, getting to see like the streets of Wakanda, not just all the high-tech places and all the costumes and clothes that the regular citizens were wearing. It kind of gave you a real sense of lived-in feel, which I think was missing from the first one. It's like, yeah, okay, I can see why there's a society here and functioning. Why are they living like in clay huts when they're like the richest nation on the planet? I don't know. I don't know about that, but it looked good. I thought it was fairly realistic, and that really stood out to me, some of the costume design for the regular people, okay? Not Ironheart or Okoye. I know that's going to be a complaint for a lot of people. I'm just talking about like the normal citizens walking around here and there. It looked good. The other thing that really stood out to me was obviously Namor and the way his motivations were explained and, you know, his fighting style and all of that. It was really well done. And the music, the way it kind of balanced between, you know, African sounds and music, and then kind of Hispanic related ones. I thought Ludwig Göransson did a fantastic job. He did Black Panther 1 as well. And it really, really stood out to me, like how much his music kind of escalated this film at times. Wasn't always inserted at the right exact moment, but when it was implemented really, really well. Anything stand out to you, Andrew?
A couple things did stand out for me. First, for one, I definitely admired the music. I love the balance between the African culture and the African sound, I should say, along with the Mexican indigenous sound. Like, it was beautiful the way it kept going back and forth, almost like a little ping pong game. It was so great. The production design, like the set designing, was fantastic. Like, you can tell Ryan Coogler put all the budget money into designing incredible set pieces. Like, he really one-upped it from the first Black Panther movie. It was beautiful to see. So much color, so much vibrancy, so much like just like enlightenment in every single person's costume. And you're right, the funeral scene was very beautiful, seeing like it was a celebration of one passing to the next, to the afterlife, rather than, you know, a sad mourning period. I can't get enough about how Namor was so beautifully explained, his backstory about being taking revenge on the colonizers, the Spaniards who conquered that land at the time, because, you know, they're underwater for so long. It was amazing to see that his story, like you mentioned, it made us sympathize with him. We understood where he was coming from, why he had to do what he did. Ryan Coogler has such a fantastic way of making you understand his villain. I know there's a confirmed rumor going around that Coogler might be, you know, in line to direct Secret Wars. So if he is up for it, if good he's pick. Up for the yeah, it would be a good pick for him to do something like that. Maybe we won't get any cheesy one-liners, because I know Michael Waldron is penning the script for Secret Wars. So, God, I hope Coogler goes in there and like just rips all those out.
just go fire Waldron. He's like, why don't you go back to like Rick and Morty, man? Just get out of here.
Man, I hope something happens with that. But those are a couple of things that I really admire. Just the beautiful scenery around Talokan, the beautiful scenery around Wakanda that we saw a lot more of. I remember in the first movie, even in like Infinity War and during during Infinity War, we saw more of like that main temp or that main like capital, you know, where they do all the technology stuff. But now in this one, we saw a lot of like the merchants and the fishermen and all of this. So it was great to get a refresher of what goes on, you know, with the commoners. So I want to hear from you, Santi. What did you not like about this movie? I know you touched on a couple of things, but tell us a little bit more about what you didn't like. Because I know there was a few.
Yeah, I definitely got some nitpicks, Andrew, but I'm going to save those for later. This movie has one glaring issue, and it's not the fact that it's too long. Look, your movie could be 4 hours long for all I care. The question like is, what are you doing? Yeah, like Lord of the Rings, I'll sit there and watch it. You know, everything, every scene, every moment has a purpose in that film. But this movie just has this random plot line with Martin Freeman, with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, his ex-wife. Yeah. And it's like, what the hell is this? Shave 30 minutes off this film, dump that CIA storyline into the garbage can. Just pick it up, throw it in the trash. I bet you Feige forced Coogler to include that garbage, because I don't think Ryan would have cared at all about any of that, because I'm just sitting there the whole time. At the end, I'm like, all right, they're fighting each other. Now the CIA is going to come and mess everything up. It's like, it never really happens. Like, so what was the point of that? Completely pointless. It killed the pacing of the film at times. That's the real issue. It's like, you got this flow of bouncing back between Namor and Wakanda. And it's like, okay, it's building up. Oh, God, another Martin Freeman scene with him, you know, whining to his ex-wife about something. And, you know, she's like, what secrets do you have? It's like, no secret. It's like, why? What the hell is this, you know, Disney Plus TV show shit that you're throwing into this film? Get this garbage out of here. It would have been a much more amazing film. 2 hours, 10 minutes, right to the point. Beautiful action from beautiful scene. Instead, they bog it down with some absolute MCU filler crap. That's the main thing that really stood out to me. Before I get to my nitpicks, Andrew, I got to hear what your criticisms are.
Everything you just said is completely valid, and I back you up on all of that. I do agree with you. The whole Martin Freeman segments, although you're right, Feige's all like, we need to connect this to the Thunderbolts movie, because that's what it obviously is. And like, so throw it in there. And Coogler's like, oh, God, fine. But I love it. I wonder if he had like a caveat, like a one condition, like, okay, fine. If you're going to make me do this, I'm going to make your CIA like the villain of, you know, the secondary villain to all this. So that was really
probably
funny.
Some backdoor deal went on over there.
Yeah. And a friend of mine, he actually gave me a funny quote that I'm going to read off to you. My friend said, I love how they were shitting on pretty much every white country, like the US, France, like China and Africa and South America couldn't give a shit about the vibration.
Oh, yeah. See, which is a blatant lie. You know, China and Russia would totally be at those meetings too. Like the richest nations on earth or most powerful ones. It's like, yeah, we want that vibranium and we're not going anywhere without it. So silly, you know, with the whole breaking into the Wakandan like prison, I don't know, not prison, but science lab, is like, you guys are walking in there with the same M4s they had like in Iron Man 1. It's like, when are you guys going to realize you're fighting against superheroes and people with like ultimate tech? It's like, how come the police and the soldiers in these films, like, how they not upgraded, you know, through everything we've been through? It's like still the same, like, shitty ass guns.
Like, come on, like. You know, like how they had the end game, you know, big fight in like, the compound. Did nobody find like a piece of vibranium from the Wakandan ships and like make weapons out of that? If I was a soldier for France and I was told like, hey, You're going to infiltrate a Wakandan ship. Yeah, I'm going to back out and resign right there. Like, I'll
go to jail. I'll go to jail.
Yeah.
I will personally leave the military. I'm not jumping in there. I mean, you're lucky the Wakandans thrown mercy on them and just kind of dragged them into court, which I don't know how they ended up there. Did they take him through, like, the airport, checking him in security? Were they, like, stuffed TSA. In bags? I don't know. It was more of like a scene or a gesture I think they were trying to make. It didn't really make sense in terms of like what was actually happening. It's like they don't have to just march him in there. Just, you know, just show him a video, show him proof, something like that. Even that, like something like that UN scene. Like, I get why it was in the film, but it didn't need to be a whole like scene. It could have been like 10 seconds just discussed.
That's true. One more thing that I think there was a good point was there was a couple unanswered questions, especially like how I'm reading right here. How when after Shuri got stabbed by the spear, which was really brutal and really nice,
I
was like,
she was
wow,
gonna
like,
die or something. I thought they were gonna need more of that purple drink to bring her back to life.
But like, how did she not die? That was literally vibranium through her body, and
she's
then
the Black Panther.
Oh my god! Right, like didn't that not puncture like a kidney or a lung? She should be gasping for air.
Yeah,
well,
the issue isn't the fact that she didn't die; it's the fact that we just like never saw anything about it again. She just kind of got up and she just flew back together with Namor and like, okay, we're united now. And it's kind of like, wait, what happened to like your wound?
Exactly. And then that's another issue that I had with this movie was the resolution of the fight.
You had an issue, Andrew, with the fact that, you know, it was after thousands of her soldiers died. She's like, I changed my mind. Maybe we should fight these people. It's like, everyone's like, yeah, good job, Shuri. Let's clap for you. It's like, dude, like everyone just died, and now you made that decision. Like, that's not good leadership.
Exactly, and like the way she was gonna fight Namor was just to turn him into a raisin and dry him out. Like, come on now. And then, how is there like coincidentally a desert in the middle of an ocean? Isn't that like paradoxical? Like, there's no deserts in oceans.
Well, it's so, like an island desert, I guess, you know, there's no,
yeah,
but at the same time he's right by the water. He could just kind of jump, go back and forth or something like that.
Seriously. Yeah.
there's definitely not a lot of logic in this film when it comes to some of like the fight sequences, even though they look really nice. Like, they have that sonic emitter under their ship. Why is there no protection under there? Why is there no like machine gun trying to blast out these blue people? You know,
these blue people
out of the water. It's kind of like, you know, that if that thing goes down, you're totally screwed. And the fact that they had this whole big battle scene, and it's like, you're Wakanda. This is the nation of Wakanda. Like, you're gonna send one ship to do all of this work? Why are you not on like different ships? And they just end up getting surrounded. Some of the stuff was just there, you know, for convenience. And I just gotta throw in my nitpick right now. I actually got a
go
couple
for
of
it.
Them the funeral scene in the beginning. I know you gotta cast extras for your films, Marvel, but there was a few of the actors were just staring right at the camera,
like, oh my god, yes,
it kind of just like awkwardly smiling. I'm like,
yes,
how is this in this film? Like, how do they not edit that? How have they not like reshoot it? Like, I get you're on a time budget, but it's like, you just see some of the actors just looking like, oh shit, mom, look, I'm in a Marvel movie. And they're just kind of like cheekily smiling at the camera. I'm like, wait, is that supposed to be someone's perspective? It's like, no, that's just the camera. It was terrible. Something else that was weird was back in, Massachusetts, or I don't know where the hell they were just like killing cops like left and right. Not at all. I mean, they were just out there investigating a scene, and they were just getting blown to smithereens by the good guys. from what I thought. And then I got to talk about Ironheart, but this MIT student, you know, she's got differential equations, she's got class,
oh my god, yes,
in her life. And then out of nowhere, she's like out there, like now she's like just sonic emitting these innocent like blue people and just like murdering and just totally okay with it. Like, just, you know, it's like, you know, killing bad guys, it's like playing video games. Just found it really weird.
What did we say, that we took like differential equations in our second year of college and they made it sound like it's some like incredibly high form of math?
For those who don't know, differential equations is a fairly, I mean, it's a difficult course, but it's fairly low in terms of, you take it like in your second year of college at most, which I know they explained that in the movie, but it's like, come on, she's got this shed full of all of this like amazing tech. She's like, I gotta go to differential equations class. It's like, you don't need to be in that class. Like, you don't even need to go. If you can do all that stuff, you can probably pass that class.
Yeah, true. And that was that, now that you bring that up, that was another thing I disliked about this movie, was how they used Ironheart and they kind of made her into a Spider-Man, Iron Man hybrid in terms of, like, their origin. Because, like, obviously everyone remembers in the first Iron Man movie, when he flies up as high as he can, his suit freezes up and he falls down, and that was his little error. And then when Ironheart flies up to the skies, she's losing oxygen. So, you know, that was that parallel. And then there was that moment in the MIT, which, you know, for those of you who know, MJ and Ned are also at MIT. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they might meet. A little connection there. Then when they meet Okoye and Shuri in her dorm, which, by the way, was hilarious when she was, like, roasting Okoye's head. Like,
this film, I know we went past our likes really quick, but the humor, just like Black Panther 1, was really well done. It wasn't your cringe humor that we've seen so many times in Marvel movies. It's like, no, it's not humor designed just to make the audience laugh. It's humor between the characters. It's just banter. It felt a lot more authentic, and that's why I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. The humor in this movie definitely surpasses anything we've seen in Multiverse of Madness, or even, God forbid, you know, Thor. But what I was going to mention about the Spider-Man mirror was, like, she mentioned, like, oh, I can't go anywhere. I have differential equations. That's a callback to when Spider-Man didn't want to go to Berlin in Civil War because, like, I got math homework. Like, come on. I see. Yeah, like, we know what you're doing. Like, you're trying to make her seem like the best of both worlds, because we're not going to see, you know, Iron Man or Spider-Man for a very long time. So it's kind of like Marvel's way of saying, you know, here you go temporarily.
Yeah, she was definitely the weak standout point in this film. You know, I don't blame the actress. I think some of the writing was just weak. I just didn't find her character that likable. You know what I mean? I know what you mean. Yeah, Letitia Wright was amazing in this film. Angela Bassett was mind-blowing in this film. Then there was the other one. I forget her name. I think Denai Gurira.
Yeah,
the general. I don't know who the general is. Okoye or whatever. Again, fantastic actress. But, yeah, really dragged down by, I don't know who played Riri Williams or Dominic Thorne.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think, maybe it's not her fault. The character was just really boring and just kind of like that annoying character in films. You know, it's like, they don't really belong. It's like, just get out of here. You know, get this character out of this film. Like, they're dragging it down. They're ruining the chemistry. It's like, you're not wanted. Just go. I get it felt just so convenient. It's like, oh, we got to find that random person who made this, you know, tracker for this metal. And it's like, maybe that's a story in the comics, but it just felt like a plot for the sake of a plot at that point. And they just brought her in just to say, oh, look, it's Ironheart. And it's like, but the character sucks.
No, I mean, I agree with you, but man, like, I thought we only had like a couple dislikes each, but we just kept going.
it's not so much dislikes, you know. I know I've gotten this criticism before, some friends who listen to the podcast. This is a good movie, and times it's really, really good. It's just more nitpicks. I think one of the things that I like to do when it comes to critiquing film is, like, there are so many little things that could change just to make the film a lot better. So, like Andrew, I don't really have major complaints outside the time, but let's just be honest. What is it never fun to, like, shit on a film, you know?
Good point.
The actor's looking at the camera during the funeral scene. Like, how could we not, how could we not make fun of that?
It was just so obvious.
It was really bad.
All right. Let's lighten the mood a little bit. Let's move on to our next piece here we got, which is, let's talk about a little bit of the facts behind the movie, maybe a little Easter eggs that we caught, and I think maybe any lingering questions that we may have out there. But so Zazi, like we mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, Black Panther Wakanda Forever originally had a different storyline. Have you heard about that?
I've heard actually that the storyline was different, but actually in the same time a little bit similar. Like, Namor was still in it.
Yeah.
But it was dealing more so with Chadwick Boseman's Black Panther, King T'Challa, his grief, not getting to see his son grow up, you know, from a young age. And am I on the right track, Andrew?
Yeah, no, you're totally right. So the whole movie was going to be originally based between the time that or when he comes back from the blip and him kind of reacclimating to the time that he lost as king, as a father. So that would have been a very interesting story.
I see. Yeah, which actually would have been really, really cool. Shame we'll never get to see that film, because I think it's one of those things that we haven't seen in the MCU. Have we seen a film where it's a character comes back from the blip and they really deal with, like, whoa, like, everything's just so different, you know, what have I missed? I don't think we have.
So we okay. So we
well, Spider-Man, had, but yeah, yeah. kind of Spider-Man, but so you kind know, of Spider-Man, over it
but there was like a one tiny segment, and we were man, we were just shitting on this movie earlier. There was one segment in Black Widow when
I've not seen Black Widow, so I will take aside my shitting on the film. I still need to see that one.
Okay, but well, I know Andrew hates kinda, it. Yeah, it's yeah, it's bad. But there was a moment where Black Widow's sister Yelena, she blips and then she comes back and then she's like super. She's like wondering like, you know, what happened? Mm. What's everything? You know, what's going on here? I think that was in Hawkeye. I don't remember anymore.
No one knows. Way. No one knows. It's all big, some big connected story. I mean, this you is know, what I mean. Like, yeah. Phase 1 and Phase 2, it's like, I remember that movie. Yeah, that happened. Now it's just kind of like, I don't know what the hell is going on. There's so many of these things. It's hard to keep track.
Yeah, you're right. Who knows when they're going to stop?
I was going to ask you, Andrew. King T'Challa Jr., King T'Challa Toussaint, is that an actual character or is that just kind of like, hey, like in 10, 15 years when we decide to go back to like King T'Challa style Black Panther, like we can cast someone else to play him? Is that kind of like a, you know, insurance for Letitia Wright if she if she goes out of line for Disney again? If Disney's like, hey, we've got your short leash, we got a little baby Toussaint waiting.
That's so funny. To be honest, I wouldn't know the answer to that question, but I do know that the name they gave T'Challa Jr. is what was it? Toussaint. Yeah,
I can't do a French accent.
Yeah, that name actually comes from the most famous and revered Haitian general of the time that helped them, I believe, free themselves from the colonizers. So that is a little fun fact right there. Is
a lot of a lot of good colonization themes in this film. It's definitely a big part of it.
It's funny how like that gets overshadowed a lot, is how the big theme of this movie. And the whole point that they even make evident in the movie is that colonization's bad. You will never colonize Wakanda. You will never take our weapons. You will never take our materials, our technology. You will never be that force that you think you always were. And yet they still try to be. The CIA even said in the movie, like, we need to topple their government. Like, dang, like they just can't get that out of their heads.
Yeah, that's just the nature of folks in power. It's always about colonization. Speaking of colonization, I think that's kind of what Ultron was trying to do in Age of Ultron. Did you think it was kind of weird when Shuri was like, you know, AI is not like the movie's mother, you know, it's not going to end us all? And it's like, did we miss Age of Ultron? Did that movie not happen? Was it retcon? Sometimes I find it weird how that line slips through the cracks with so many people involved in a giant film like this. Like, so no one ever went like, what about Ultron? Should we just, you know, do we need this joke in line in this film? Maybe we should get rid of it.
Speaking of which, and a little other Easter egg fun fact is that the AI in the movie is voiced by the one and only The Daily Show's Trevor Noah, which voiced the AI. Yeah, it's Trevor Noah, which he voiced the AI in the first Black Panther too.
I had no idea. That's actually pretty cool. You know, Trevor Noah's a funny guy.
I think so too. He is South African, so, you know, power to him. He got a little role in this.
Andrew, I'm going to ask you a few questions.
Go ahead.
Because as the Marvel expert, on the across the an array of podcasts, I would say you're one of the top Marvel guys. Not to put too much expectations on you, but I do have some questions.
You're gonna throw me down.
That I need you to answer. Okay. I think a lot of fans are also wondering about these questions as well. Andrew, what was going on when Namor talked about mutation? Is that related to X-Men? Is vibranium a source of mutation in the MCU? What's going on with that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, we have been hearing in the MCU, you know, mutants floating around. I know we got our first confirmation. Actually, we saw our first mutant in Multiverse of Madness, which is Professor Xavier, which was great. And then we got our second confirmed mutant in the actual MCU 616 timeline, which is Ms. Marvel. In the Ms. Marvel show, they found out that her genetic makeup is actually a mutation that was activated with the little bracelet that she wears. And then in She-Hulk there was a small blink and you miss it moment where Tatiana Maslany's character, she's reading an article on her iPad, and in the corner of the article you see a headline that says "Man in bar with claws starts fight."
And so here we go.
Yep, that's the one and only Wolverine. And then, yeah, you're right. And then in this movie, Black Panther Wakanda Forever, we see that Namor is a confirmed mutant. He says it himself, which is amazing because, you know, we heard the word mutation in Ms. Marvel. They didn't even say the word mutant. They said mutation. And for the longest time, when the X-Men rights were owned by Fox, Marvel was forbidden from ever using the word mutant. That's why in Age of Ultron, when we were introduced to Wanda Maximoff and Pietro Maximoff, they were known as enhanced individuals. So, you know, we were dancing around that word for a while, and then so, Namor finally says it.
So Disney spent $71 billion
to use
the word mutant, basically.
Yeah, and it's hypothesized that the vibranium flower that Namor's mom consumed when he was pregnant is what activated the mutant gene. And as we saw in Deadpool, mutant genes can be activated under different circumstances and for most people under severe duress, which is why they succumbed, you know, Wade Wilson or all that torture to activate the gene. So, yeah, you're right. The vibranium flower probably did have something to do with activating his mutant gene. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. I appreciate all of you.
My bad. I was trying to think of something else. You answered that so well. I was like, all right, let me try to think of something that's actually going to stump you.
So while Santi thinks of another question, I want to give you guys one other fun fact is that as Santi mentioned, the composer of this movie, Ludwig Göransson, he actually was heavily tasked with creating the Mayan Mexican sound music to go along with Namor's side of the film, which he actually just mentioned in an interview that he Googled Mayan rappers, and the first one that came up, he went down to the Yucatan area, and that's where he found one of the Mayan rappers and asked, hey, I'm making a movie for Marvel, do you want to be a part of it? So he even mentioned in an interview that he went down there and spent like months just using Mayan instruments from historians to make some of the music, and he even confirmed that Mayan music has been lost, unfortunately, throughout the ages, but some historians were able to dig up some unique sounds for him, and those are in the movie. So fantastic work by Ludwig Göransson, and I hope, although it's an MCU movie, he does get at least an Oscar nom for his work composing all this.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I think the first one was also nominated for an Oscar when it came to its soundtrack, and I think this one's also deserving of it for sure. Andrew, I did come up with a question to ask you.
Oh, boy.
It's related to what is this Thundercat thing I keep hearing about, or what is it? Thunderbolt. Pikachu's Thunderbolt. What are these guys, and why were they wasting time, my time, in Black Panther Wakanda Forever?
So yeah, the Thundercat, by the way, I hope all of you look him up on Spotify. Amazing musical artist. I'm not even joking there, so I hope all of you do look up Thundercat. Yeah, the Thunderbolts, from my understanding, are another team. Think of the Thunderbolts are the MCU's answer to the Suicide Squad. So there are a bunch of villains that are brought together to do the tasks of a government. You know, like how in DC, Amanda Waller is commanding the Suicide Squad to take down that giant Project Starfish from the James Gunn movie, because we're not talking about the David Ayer movie. But in this movie with the Thunderbolts, it is hypothesized, and it looks like we're going in the direction, as mentioned in the Wakanda Forever movie, they want to topple Wakanda, the government, and it is looking that the Thunderbolts are going to be the ones that are used to infiltrate and take down the so-called government, and that's what's going to lead. And if you remember, at the end of the Wakanda Forever, Namor did say to Namora, his cousin, saying they're going to one day come ask for our help. That's why I made the pact. So, you know, if all of you are connecting the dots, the Thunderbolts go into Wakanda to take them down, then they're gonna probably call on Namor like, hey, we need your help again. And so
we're gonna get Disney's G-rated Suicide Squad, basically. No cursing allowed or anything like that, and just super tame and boring. Andrew, before we get into our score and wrap up, I was gonna ask you, how about that Michael B. Jordan cameo? I mean, it caught me off guard. I think I should have expected it, but I didn't. And it was fantastic, and it fit really well. For a second, I got excited. I'm like, oh my gosh, are they actually going to bring him back as the new Black Panther? Of course, that would have been too good to be true and wouldn't have really made sense because he's dead. But it was absolutely fantastic to see him.
Yeah, no, it was great. I love seeing pop out of nowhere. I know, like, it was exciting to see him come back, and wow, what a powerful little moment that he did give, is getting, you know, into Shuri's mind and pretty much telling her, like, hey, finish what I started. And which is really honestly shocking, because why would she not want to be more like her brother? Like, we saw her just walk right past T'Challa's helmet, and it ended up using Killmonger's. Like, it's that still shocks me, like, why she did that.
Yeah, I think it was really interesting how they interweave that into this, the whole, like, oh, your dad was, you know, kind of bit shady, you know, your brother was too honorable. I didn't think they would go in that route, but it worked really well, because I think it gives the audience, us, a lot more context into what kind of character Shuri's gonna be. It's not just gonna be like, oh, okay, she's the Black Panther now, she's gonna waltz into it, and, you know, it is what it is. But we get to know a little bit more about her personality, you know, what kind of leader she wants to be. Is she gonna do, like, the tough things, make the difficult decisions, or is she gonna be, you know, super highly honorable? Looks like we're gonna get a bit of a mix of both, which is really excited. I wouldn't be surprised if in the future, I don't know how that purple drink thing works, but if she keeps if she keeps going back in there, you know, talking to Michael B. Jordan, Killmonger and all that, getting more ideas, maybe getting a little Darth Vader influence, go to the dark side, come back, you know, could be a cool villain little twist. Probably won't happen, but it would be good to see.
It really would be. All right, so with all of that put together, and as our listeners know what that means, I want to get into what our final score is. So I know you heard a lot of us talk about this movie. I'm so happy that we were able to keep this grounded to the film in particular, because that's what we love to do. So Santi, start us off. What would you give this movie out of 5 tickets?
Andrew, I would give Black Panther Wakanda Forever a very, very strong 3.5 out of 5 tickets. I think it does everything it needs to in selecting the next Black Panther for this franchise to move forward. I think the villain is really interesting. In Namor, we got to see a lot of him. The acting, for the most part, is quite fantastic, and does a good job balancing the delicate storyline of grief and dealing with the loss of not just, you know, King T'Challa, but Chadwick Boseman, and really honors him in the right way. At the same time, while it does a lot of those things well, it's just a bit too bogged down by its runtime, and that really does hamper my overall enjoyment of the film. But I would definitely recommend everyone to go out and watch this on the big screen, the good audio, because the soundtrack and the music is absolutely fantastic, and the film looks absolutely gorgeous at times. It was well worth my time, just took up a little too much of it. Andrew, what's your score?
Oh man, that's good. I like everything that you have to say about that. So for me, I believe I'll give my score at the end. So the way that Coogler introduced the villain of the movie, it made you sympathize and understand the motives with the backstory, is something that has been rarely done and accomplished well in previous movies. This one to me stands out from the rest of them in terms of the storytelling, the set design, the costume design, and even the score, like we mentioned over and over again. There's nothing like it, especially with the score that draws you in, because it is epically captured from both sides, and I thought it was beautiful. I personally don't go into these movies anymore expecting a cameo or an overarching connection. I do that myself, you know, after the movie on my own time. But the way this movie was appropriately done to pay homage to Chadwick Boseman, as well as introduce new characters at the same time, was phenomenal. Coogler is a master at work when it comes to directing, and he definitely knew what he was doing. So for me, I'm not that far off. I give it a strong 4 out of 5. I think it accomplished what it needed to do. Like Santi said, would I ever watch this a third, fourth time? Probably not. I'll probably throw it on when it comes to Disney Plus for sure. But like Santi said, I recommend all of you to go check it out in theaters. Beautiful movie. You'll love it. And we cannot wait to see how it holds up against Blue People number 2 coming out in December.
Oh, it's not even going to be a competition. That movie, you saw the trailer right before this film. Absolutely gorgeous, the way of water looks. And we're actually going to get a look at a proper look at underwater, not some dark, you know, deep sea, planet Earth stuff, David Attenborough style.
I hope it's narrated by him too. Oh, I would love that. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of our Tickets for Two podcast. We really appreciate it. But we want to leave you with a little bit of a preview of what we're going to be talking about next week. I know we did back-to-back MCU movies, and I promise you guys, we are not an MCU-heavy podcast. That's for the other guys to do. We are a Universal, you know, Oscar-loving, you know, sci-fi, Star Wars, you know, everything. Kind of podcast. We
and
are
you know
everything.
What, Andrew, as we start getting into the winter season, gonna be doing a lot of films that maybe you won't hear on your traditional podcast. We really want to cover a lot of the movies that are going to be nominated for Oscars, going to be nominated for the Golden Globe Awards. We really want to dig into that, talk more about them, not just review them, but really kind of go into, you know, what they did well, what the themes were and all that, because that's what really makes us passionate about doing these podcasts. We do like to cover the big blockbusters because sometimes they're just a lot of fun to talk about and, you know, they need to be. At the same time, we really, really want to dig into these smaller budget films as the winter season and award season approaches.
Totally agree. And I hope all of you who are listening, you come and join us, because when Oscar time rolls around, we're going to have a fun little game and we're going to start checking off of what we predict are going to win in each category. So please stick around for all that.
Yeah. We say that, and then like a month, I'm like, oh my God, Avatar 2 was the best fucking movie I've ever seen, man.
We do have our biases here and there and our favorites. We got to cater to them. But we want to give a little preview of what we're going to be talking about next week. So, Santi, give them a little taste. Literally.
Andrew, if you like food, I don't know what this movie's about, but you might like it. We're going to be doing The Menu, starring Anya Taylor-Joy and Nicholas Hoult. They are a couple who travel to a coastal island to eat at an exclusive restaurant where the chef, played by Ralph Fiennes, has prepared a lavish menu with some shocking surprises. This is a comedy slash horror, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It is directed by Mark Mylod, who did a lot of the Game of Thrones episodes on TV. I don't know if it's his first feature film, but I'm always a sucker for a comedy horror where you don't really know what direction it's going to go in. So I think this one will be a lot of fun, and I'm excited to talk about it with you.
Honestly, me too. And I think you and I, in general, are both food aficionados. We both
love
eating it.
That's right. We love food.
We love it here, and I mean, I know you can't see our faces, but I hope our cheeks are not puffing up anytime soon. But okay, we hope all of you get to stick around and come and join us next week, so and we'll see you then.
See you next time.